Today I want to talk about growing bodhisattvas, how to grow a bodhisattva, how aspiring bodhisattvas, how it's done, maybe, in some ways. Because as children, we are the object of sustenance, you know, from the get-go. We're taken care of. Our eating, our clothing, our shelter. For most of us, there are many of us, that's the case. And so we're an object of sustenance. And when is it that we become a provider of sustenance? And I look back to growing up and being a teenager, getting my driver's license, expecting to drive the car, expecting to do all the things that now a young man can do and go off and do things, and then suddenly I'm on my own. And yeah, I got a little money because my mom helped me set up a savings account. But man, how am I going to make it? Where's that meal that mom, I know I could get if I went back to mom's. How am I going to sustain me? And then on top of that, then you start finding, you know, you're finding out that it's really hard to sustain yourself. And to figure it out how you're going to manage to do it. And then on top of that, you learn about Buddhism, and you learn that one of the things to aspire for is to be a bodhisattva, where it's like you are serving everybody. So how do you go from being an object of sustenance to a provider of sustenance? And there are many ways it happens. Some get it quite early when they are in circumstances where their support is on shaky ground and things are not dependable and they have to pitch in. On the family raft, they have to become polesmen or ropesmen on the raft to help the family raft make it. So these people may, even though it's so hard, they might learn that there's a bigger contribution one makes. That a lot of us privileged with fine upbringings rarely have to encounter, except on a theoretical level of like, yeah, we need to get together a care package for the poor people in town. And then what merit will I derive from that? So it's still pretty early in development. We had a visitor recently here, a Lakota woman, Kia was her name, and she said that where the culture she was brought up in, the fundamental principle was to help others, to help meet the needs of others, and so among the Lakota, the bodhisattva vow is just a fundamental attribute. And it's not necessarily fundamental in other cultures or other family circumstances.
What's that called, Dark? A giveaway when they have a special event in the Lakota?
They were talking about for this Vision Quest to have a giveaway at the end of it.
A giveaway.
Where there's this...
They share some things.
Yes, the gifts of some sort for the people that took care of those on the those that were on the quest are supported by many people, and they provide gifts for those who support them, a giveaway. And there's great satisfaction in putting that together and in offering it. Probably lots of enjoyment in that. So, one of the fundamental aspects that we turn on is afflictions. I mean, we turn on is we then get informed through our afflictions of how we're doing, how to relate. And Bodhidharma, he said, out of this, the red book here, if it weren't for affliction, there would be nothing to create awareness. If it weren't for awareness, there would be nothing to expose or help eliminate affliction. When you are deluded, Buddhas liberate mortals. When you are aware, mortals liberate Buddhas. Buddhas don't become Buddhas on their own. They are liberated by mortals. Buddhas regard delusion as their father and greed as their mother. Delusion and greed are different names for mortality. So who creates no dharma obtains the truth, the dharma. He who creates no karma obtains the dharma. So today I want to talk about growing bodhisattvas, eliminating karma, and the seven powers. And I like these seven powers because, you know, when you start talking about the seven spiritual powers, it's like, yeah, there's the way to do it. Might be a secret. Might have to pay some money for this to find out what these powers are. So there are seven powers. Five faculties that make the seven powers are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Those are the five faculties. And faith controls faithlessness. And lack of devotion and confidence. Energy, the power of energy, controls indolence. The power of mindfulness controls heedlessness. The power of concentration controls agitation. And the power of wisdom controls ignorance. Now, in the Theravadin tradition, they list two more powers, moral shame and moral dread. Moral shame controls shamelessness, and moral dread controls scrupulousness. Now, to eradicate karma is not something we talk too much about in Soto Zen, but the Tibetans have examined this. And they talk about there are four remedial powers that, here are four more powers, these are just remedial powers, but they help with this process. The power of dependence and reliance. And I understand if you're using the power of dependence, I don't think it's to find ways to become dependent on others, but it's a way of seeing dependence and our reliance on our world. The second is the power of feeling regret for negative actions. The third power is the power of remedy and retribution, the power to even enjoy the process of the remedy. And then the fourth is the power of determination to never do it again. Now, you'll probably do it again. We'll probably all do it again. But the power that you infuse in the regret increases the success of the nullifying of karma. So I like these words. Regret, it almost sounds like grit. You know, you got grit you got to work with, and dang, you know, it's just, dang, I got some regret, and you got to rework with this grit. And then there's remorse, and morse is based on morsel, or to chew. To remorse is to re-chew. And then there's repent. And what is suggested is that in this process of reviewing our regrets, that we offer it to the universe, to fields of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as and see the impermanence in what we've done. You know, how things changed because of what we had done. Examine the ramifications in many different quadrants, whether it's with just within me, within others, around the peripheral. Sometimes we do something that is kind of huge and may even be like a tsunami, where, like, you're riding the wave and having a great time, but things get destroyed in your surroundings. And how do we meet that? I'm working on it. Part of the process of being motivated to examine our regrets is the immediacy, the need to do it now, before I die. Take care of this business. Not to waste another moment in examining this. And there are just countless ways it manifests. So the four remedial powers again are dependence and reliance, the feeling of regret, the remedy with even the power to enjoy the restitution, and the fourth power is to vow to never do it again. Reb Anderson in Being Upright wrote, "The complete purifying power of confession, the complete purifying power of confession. Confession involves tasting again the bitterness of your non-virtue. So this is just one of the attributes, one of the aspects of how bodhisattvas can purify their karma and become more functional. And I want to end with out of the vow of the bodhisattva, the Bodhicharyavatara, the pain and sorrows of all wandering beings, may they ripen wholly on myself. May the virtuous company of bodhisattvas bring about the happiness of beings. So, when we do things, though, that, like, I think everybody has experienced these processes and may not notice the details of them so much, but for example, I've had 2 speeding tickets recently. So, I have something to regret because
it's expensive for one
thing. I'm writing 2 checks. Now, I could say I have no regrets, no apologies, no regrets. I'm moving on. And then cha-ching, my insurance goes way up.
Yeah.
And a $200 fine becomes a $1,000 fine, and so on. So I do slow down and pay closer attention. So there is a remedy. There is resultant action and thought and change of behavior to not have that, I'd call it a karmic event, occur again. I wanted to provide was just, not that it's good to work with regrets, but there's a process and how to work it through, and maybe it can be useful even though we operate as if there's nothing to gain. I find in my day that there are times where I've had an opportunity to empower somebody with further discussion, with meeting them instead of avoiding them, to meet them and empower them with of who they are and what they're doing, and it would be good for me to hear. And when I don't take advantage of some of those circumstances, when I don't, we have choices to make, I in a way feel a regret that of an opportunity missed. Once I felt that regret, poof, it's gone. It's not like it goes in my regret pouch and it's just getting huge. But, and I'll be Santa this year, hand them out. But there are people, like one colleague I've worked with, he was brought up with no regrets, no apologies. I thought, wow, that's a big one to have. So how, anyway, any other? Yes?
So I have just some consideration about the concept of karma. And from what I'm hearing, it's not only today, but in general, it seems that there is a lot to do, or something about mental process, decision makings. Like saying, if you do something once, it's okay. If you do twice, well, once it's 3 times, it's a habit, and then you generate karma, or something like that. So to me, it's a lot of mental process. So it's really like almost neuroscience. You know, how you are perceiving your decisions, how you overcome fears, regrets, concerns, and then how you can open up and make different decisions to help others. But at the end, it seems to be a lot about yourself. But I always had this idea that karma is something about higher than you. Like you make decisions, but somehow they start to, it's a ripple around, and you generate waves of events that reflects on others, and they can come back. So whatever you do, it's always somehow karmic, in good and in bad. But so to me, the concept of being without karma, as you said, makes sense in a more in a neuroscientific point of view, saying you get rid of habits, fears, bad processing, that you can really, you know, expand yourself and behave differently, open to others, connect, go towards and grow. But in the concept that I had of karma, you can't. Whatever you will do, you can do good karma, bad karma, but how can you be without karma? There is always a cause and an effect in whatever you do, even just sitting. You're generating karma just sitting when you meditate. So I want to hear your point.
When you have five possibilities of a course of action you take and you consider them to do it, to reluctantly do it, to not do it, to reject doing it. There are more possibilities. Each of those have ramifications, and we anticipate consequences from those. And sometimes it's like a pinball machine. You want to knock down a few targets. So you do one thing, you're going to take care of two birds, and do another, and maybe take care of six. So it's we have a way to guide us as we take action. If we take no action when we're just sitting, you think we're generating karma.
Because instead of doing something else, I'm still here. And the fact that I'm here, just my breathing, is an action by itself. It's not a non-action. It's action, even sitting. Mm-hmm. So you are always part of that. Always. You know, the choice of, instead of being in the kitchen, being here, instead of talking with someone, I'm talking with myself while I'm sitting. But that's still a cause and effect.
There's two, if I could interject, there's two kind of understandings of karma. And one that we commonly carry is might be called like repercussions of specific actions, or the effect, as you mentioned, the effects of various actions. And the other one is just action itself. So there's a kind of broad view of karma that is, I think it's actually translated as activity or action. That's karma. So there's, in classical Buddhism, there's kusula karma, which is wholesome karma, and akusula karma, which is unwholesome karma. So in this kind of bigger view of karma, it doesn't have to do with the repercussions of activities or the causes of activities, but the activity itself. So that's one view of karma. But I think our more common view of karma is the repercussions of the actions, or the effects of the actions. And particularly what we focus on and how we use the term karma is the negative effects of activity. So like, you know, like having to pay the parking ticket.
Except that, as Chris pointed out many times, And as you brought up, what the first thing you asked us was, which was, what did we learn from my father's karma, actually, which now I have is inside of me, and I did manifested that to my children without even knowing, and created regret, and then later realizing that I was in a different place now than I was then. So I mean, I think what you're pointing towards is quite deep. Then it's, but you can call it what you like, karma, but this is life. I mean, you have an effect on me. So, but everything, people specifically, but I mean, everything has an effect on me, as I, in a way, have an effect on everything else, I suppose. I don't know if that's exactly kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, an example is something that inspired me is, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about karmasu kausalam, which is a perfect action. So the yoga of action, actually sitting in Buddhism, is a form of yoga itself. Right? And sometimes the way I perceive that in sitting, I just like trying to change myself. Suzuki Roshi talks about that sitting as a form of reprogramming your personality. I like that term. So to me, that's a process of reprogramming me in order to have a more and more clean and perfect action. So my actions are generating always something, but the way I behave is more center and aligned, so I create a better karma.
That's a little.
I think maybe expanding on what Michael was saying is like karma, being there's different kinds, but karma we're mostly concerned about is could be defined as volitional action, like, and there was this. A situation where I was in town, I was having lunch, and then this older couple had the older man knocked off his drink and it hit the floor. And like I've been in that situation many times where I'm like, what do I do? How should I do? How do I respond? But I just noticed, I just got up, grabbed some napkins, I'm cleaning this up, not even thinking about it. I stand up and they thank me. They're like I've really done something, and then I was like embarrassed because I knew that I'm not really the kind of guy that responds that well, and so there was probably, and I look at it now, there was no karma when I got up and picked it up, but when they thanked me, suddenly my ego's involved and I start making choices, but there was very clearly. To me, when it happened, there was no choice. There was no volitional action. Something happened. I moved with it. So the idea
appropriate of, response.
Appropriate response. So when we're just flowing with the stream, we create no karma, and it almost never happens. Do you think that's?
Mm-hmm. It's something to add to that is that. From your examples to Doug is that as far as the conditions of a certain cause, like the effect of a certain activity, we are, and what you talked about with your kind of legacy thing from your father, is that we are, the bottom line is we are conditioned by past events. That is unreversible, whether they're positive or negative. We are the product of all of our of past events, ours and others, even the whole culture, even the whole species. We are the product of that. That's irreversible. So that's unchangeable. That is, we can't change that. And if there are repercussions, we still have to pay the parking ticket. We have to pay up. That's the common understanding. That paying up is the common understanding of karma as a kind of payback. We have to pay for our debts. But this is the important point. But even though we have to pay up, and even though we are conditioned, We are at this moment. At this moment, we are. We can make. We can apply the recommendations of what Doug talked about of affecting, actually affecting future causes and conditions, future karma. So what we can't do is we can't not pay our debt or not be conditioned. We can't do that. But at this moment, we can affect future karma with, you know, with those things that you mentioned. So, mm-hmm. So it's only now that we can change future karma, but we're still subject to the karmic conditions of all our past actions.
Actions are the grounds in which I stand. Just something to that effect. That's all I have.
Yeah, and we embody our whole, yeah, all of it, yeah. But we've got this great opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
We receive, we can burn it all up.
What was that?
New Year's Eve.